Ronaldo's got that twist now and pivot in the air.
Yeah.
I look at him doing that and I'm thinking, ooh, be careful. Yeah. That's like cruciate. That's potential cruciate in the making.
Subscribe now to the OTB Football Podcast stream wherever you get your podcasts and download the OTB Sports app.
Now, you're welcome back. So I think it's fair to say it's been an interesting 15 months when it comes to the Republic of Ireland team. A man very much at the centre of all that joins us in studio now. Very happy to say Keith Andrews, Ireland assistant coach, is here. It's great to have you in. Thanks for coming in.
No worries, Joe. Pleasure.
I was just saying to you there a moment ago that you're usually, or you were for a time in here, dishing out the criticism. So.
I know, it goes around, comes around.
It's good to see you get some over the last 15 months.
Look, you've got to have a thick skin, haven't you?
So loads to talk about. The point of this chat really is, I suppose, to reflect on the last 15 months, to look ahead to the October internationals, Azerbaijan on the 9th of October, Qatar, and then in November it's Portugal and Luxembourg. So much as anything, because we haven't seen you much publicly. You have kept a low profile. That's your decision, is it?
Or
that
like,
you're thinking?
I think so. I've been quite conscious of being front and centre of things. Obviously, I had a presence, like you've alluded to, in here and on other platforms at certain stages since retirement, which I enjoyed, really enjoyed, but I felt it was important once I took this role in particular to a point with the 21s, but certainly with this role with Stephen, with the senior team, it was important that I did take a little bit of a backseat. I still do bits and bobs in England, as you know, with Sky, and I enjoy going over, being at games first and foremost, and then that gives me the chance as well to go and watch our players, which we do a lot as well. So yeah, I think it was certainly a conscious decision that I made at the time.
Yeah, because I mean, previous regimes, I suppose the Roy Keane, Martin O'Neill one jumps to mind. Tuesday or Wednesday press conference, he was out, and then later in the week it was O'Neill. You decided not to go in for that.
Yeah, look, Stephen's very good with me, full stop, and we're very much a team in how we work together on everything. On aspects like that, he would have been open to me doing some, but no, he hasn't pushed it, and equally I haven't really been wanting to either.
Has this lived up to what you hoped it would be when it comes to coaching? I'm sure you had thoughts of getting into coaching versus media. How have you enjoyed it?
It's been tough. Like, there's no getting away from that. The timing of it, I think if you roll it all into one, 21 senior, I've loved it. I have absolutely loved it. I think you know the passion I have for the Irish team, full stop. Player, fan, now coach. I think when you look at what we've had to go through in the world over the last 18 months, it's just been very, very difficult to navigate your way through that at certain stages because of COVID and because of the impact that it had on us. Going back 12 months ago, that autumn of last year was so difficult. It's been different this year. I think it's been more enjoyable, and that's played a huge part in it, just how we deal with each other. And it hasn't been as strict, if you like, or hasn't been as prevalent, certainly in our camps, and hopefully that continues. And I think you know as well, since retirement, I've always wanted to be proactive. I've always wanted to stay in the game. I love football. I've always done both. For the last few years of playing, and then when I retired, I've done media. I've also coached the underage teams, and I've got a real passion for it and desire for us to do well. So it's had its tests, obviously, and it hasn't been plain sailing, clearly, and obviously most people only know certain parts of it, and I think it's important that we touch on certain parts and how difficult it has been at times, as well as obviously being enjoyable for large parts.
Yeah, well, I don't think I'm breaching confidence to say you reached out and said, look, I haven't done much. I might come in for a chat. Feel free to, you know, throw the criticisms at me, and it's a chance for me to respond. How much of the criticism are you aware of? What would you say is the biggest criticism of management or the team over the last year?
Yeah, I have to be completely honest. In camp, I read nothing, absolutely nothing. I've told friends and family to not send me things. I don't want to. I want to be tunnel visioned when it comes to our games. Post game, you know, all I get back to is messages from friends and family. I don't touch on any news source, and I think that's important. Post camp, I have to be honest, I don't tend to get into too much, but you obviously hear little bits and bobs back, like when I'm going to my butchers and they're nailing us for not scoring too many goals at the time. So it's, look, that's part and parcel of it.
Are they really in the butchers?
Yeah, yeah, they are. Yeah, they're hilarious. Yeah, they tell us what team to pick, who should be playing, who shouldn't be playing. So there's that kind of, yeah, very, very transparent with their thoughts. So that started going back even when I was there, like not in football, just having chats. And such a section would take me 20 minutes. Yeah. And
but it's impossible to keep the world totally out. So you'd have a sense of what is being said. So what do you think the big criticism is?
Well, obviously results. Mm. Obviously results. You're in a results business. And you need to get results, and that's something obviously we're fully aware of. And I think if some of those games where the results have swung in our favour, where they've slightly gone the other way, then I think in the main a lot of people would be content, or certainly the ones that have been critical of the regime or what we've tried to put in place. So I would say that's probably the biggest criticism, but you will have heard a lot more than I would have, obviously.
It was very interesting. Stephen Kenny came out recently and said this is very much about the Euros in 2024. Is that your understanding? Like, did you two sit down and map it out that way? Is that how you viewed the World Cup qualification? Is that how you viewed your time together?
No, would be the answer. In short, to elaborate on that, I think where Stephen's coming from with that will be, and this is my opinion, it's not a short-term view. I think the short-term view to this crossroads where we've come to in Irish football, and it is a crossroads and it has been a crossroads of what's gone on in that building in recent years, which we've talked about, everybody's talked about, and rightly so. We're on the road to recovery in the background, and I think in terms of the actual pitch, the football side, the players, the organisation all around that, I think if you took a really short-term view, it would only get you so far. I've said this before, and probably more privately amongst us, and again amongst friends and family, I felt there had to be a little bit of short-term pain to get where we needed to go. So when you look at some of these players that have come in to the squad over the last 12 months or so, it hasn't been plain sailing for some of them. Some of them have had very good performances followed by not so good performances. But I think when you look at the whole, I think what Stephen's getting at is this group was always going to be very difficult, no doubt. Does that mean we went into this campaign thinking we're going to be comfortable sat third, fourth, fifth? Obviously not.
Yeah.
But I think there's a bigger picture view, and I think he needs credit for that, because he does look long term. He does look at Irish football, and I pointed out World Cup 92, which is 88 and 90 were what made me fall in love with football. He is a visionary. He is a romantic when it comes to Irish football and where he thinks it should be perceived. And I'm very much aligned with that.
Are the results worse than you thought they'd be when you say you anticipated short-term pain?
Yeah, they are, yeah. Yeah, there's no two ways of getting away from that. I think you've got to look at it in different ways. I certainly do. Not everybody has to. That's probably wrong. I look at it in terms of performances. And in terms of performances, you look back at the game, obviously, with your own eyes and the different camera angles that we have and our analysis department. We all look at it back. We all get together, coaching staff, technical staff, and see, obviously, where it went wrong. Did we give the right information? Was the game plan right? Was the strategy right? The information to the players, the opposition, did we get our analysis right on them in terms of how to break them down? We've also introduced a data company, and it's all performance related, a German company that PSG use, top European teams use, all around your KPIs, around how you win games. And there's a direct correlation between these KPIs, what you hit in game, and the results. And in certain results, we should have won that haven't gone our way. Performance wise, when you look at the data, when we look at our eyes back and see the game, we feel, backed up with data, that we should have won certain games. Now, that obviously hasn't happened, and they're the tough ones to take. And equally, certain games, there's periods of games, Azerbaijan, Luxembourg, where there's periods of those games that we're far from happy with the level of performances.
What's happening in those periods?
Opposition, obviously, throw spanners in the works. If you look at the most recent one, where there's a little bit of frustration, would be, for me, 10, 12, 15 minutes into the first half against Azerbaijan. Started the game very, very well, front foot, asking serious questions. We're big on penetration in terms of getting beyond teams, getting into areas where we feel we can hurt the opposition, and certainly with the personnel available to us, I think that's a way that we have looked to go. Our out of possession shape and our strategy around how we win the ball back was lopsided, wasn't as efficient as it should and could have been.
That's an interesting one you bring up, say, for instance, the Azerbaijan game. So you have the three younger lads up top there in Parrott, Conley and Ida. And it was very interesting even watching on the television. So example, first, you know, 15, 20 minutes, like you say, keeper has the ball. The three lads aren't pressing the keeper. You kind of think, OK, fair enough. Maybe you might like to see it at home, get the crowd going. But certainly first pass to centre half, who's pulled wide. No real pressure on him either, and play develops. And Stephen Kelly was on commentary, and he said, well, that must be from Stephen Kenny. That is Stephen Kenny, because the players wouldn't not press there unless they were told. And then watching the Serbia game, the pressure on the ball, keeper, and certainly if not keeper, first pass was definitely a trigger. So were there different messages for both games? Or in the Azerbaijan game, did players maybe just drop the ball a bit, or maybe you didn't communicate well enough to players, or something went wrong there?
Yeah, first off, there is different intricacies going into each game. It's not set in stone. How we found, even with a really short lead up to a game, players are really good at taking information on board. Okay. I think that's the era we live in now. So a lot of that isn't on the grass. When you look at Portugal in terms of what we actually had in terms of preparation time, some players played on a Sunday and then we go again on a Wednesday. So they're not actually going to kick too many footballs between that and the game. Mm. But the information that they take on board, we try and give them about the strategy, both in and out of possession, a game plan, a model, whatever way you want to call it. They've been brilliant at taking it on board. And there is differences game to game. And that's something I think as a staff we're very conscious of. We want to try and have a consistency. I think you've seen that in the system we've played in the last three camps. And then within that, in and out of possession, how much can we as a staff throw at the players for them to take on board and not bombard them with different messages, because they're all coming from different clubs and styles and you have to bring that together. So for those games, there was differences in how we approached it, from goal kicks, set restarts. They will look like that. Can we again go and approach it like this? And in game to game, there is differences. You've touched on the three front lads, 19, 20, 21 years of age. There's elements of that, and this wasn't just their fault, by the way. There was elements in terms of how we pressed as a team that we didn't react to quick enough. So for me, there's a plan, can you go and win the back? But there's also a plan of you don't get played through too easily. And I felt for 25, 30 minutes in the first half, we allowed them to play through us too easily. And Makhmudov, their talisman, number eight, was very prevalent in that period of the game, which we'd alluded to before the game. And look, technically they're a good team when you give them time and space to play.
So is that a good kick up the ass for everyone at half time kind of a game then?
I think so. I think you have to go about it in certain ways, and you have to get the message across of there's the tactical approach here that we set up and we all agreed to and we all buy into, and the players are brilliant at buying into it. Training ground meetings, everything around it. But then there's also a reaction on the pitch to what's actually happening and how we need to try and stop that on the pitch. And I think when it gets to half time, it's here's how we tweak it.
Yeah.
But the next level is you've got to find ways of stopping them. You've got to think outside the box on the pitch as well, in terms of this isn't right, this doesn't feel right as a team. And then your leaders, your vocal players on the pitch obviously come to the fore.
And that's where lack of experience comes in a touch as well. On the point you sort of made initially, say it's about results, it's hard. There's so much talk about the team at the moment that I don't remember it being as divisive before. There's almost there's a real like split when it comes to this, but it's hard to try and knit what all the criticisms are together into one kind of perfect line to you. But I suppose you hit on it when you said ultimately it's about results, and you would have played under Trapattoni, and so you would understand the value of pragmatism and being organised and being tough to beat, and you reach a Euros and could have reached a World Cup. If you were trying to deduce what other former internationals maybe looking on are saying, or critics publicly are saying, it would be, have we lost sight of just getting results too much? All for playing youngsters and looking to 2024, but actually have we gone too far away from, let's primarily be tough to beat? And so one area where that's kind of a concern is the goals that are being conceded. I mean, they're so soft, they must be driving you and Stephen Kenny berserk at times. So talk to us about even whatever it's scoring goals, and we all know we don't have a Robbie Keane, and people keep saying that over and over again. What about at the back and the goals that we're conceding?
Yeah, I think, and this is me being entirely honest, I think our are out of possession shape, if you like, has a real structure. People might perceive a back five to be defensive. I don't fall into that category. I never have, in terms of systems. You make of them what you want. You position players in that system where you need them to go and be. I think, you know, certain goals, Luxembourg free goal, he should never have scored that goal. When you look back at it, I've looked back at it probably 20-30 times, there's no way he should score that goal from where he is. There's no way the Azerbaijan goal should be scored. He's 25-27 yards from goal. We have pressure on the ball. Should have got more pressure.
We don't have pressure on the ball.
We should have had more pressure on it.
Yeah, that's actually an example for me of a soft goal. He actually just ran out of ideas because no one was pressing him and felt, well, I might as well shoot. I think it was Coleman. If they're not going to press me, I'll just keep going and I'll shoot.
Soft goals for me are when you're defensively all over the place. You're stretched.
Okay. So how
there's
how,
gaps in your defence where you're constantly getting undone.
Yeah.
Portugal away, some of the most outstanding players in world football, couldn't really break us down until the 89th minute. Like that's a collective approach to stopping the opposition. And I suppose, if you flick it in terms of a mentality for us, and the message at half time against Portugal would be, and this goes back to maybe that long ago, World Cup 90, certainly my teams, at times, if we've got our noses in front, we've taken a step backwards. Mm-hmm. Now, in the second half against Portugal, everybody was anticipating a reaction and them to push us back, but we still had to probe forward. We still had to find ways of causing problems for them. When you flick it to the Azerbaijan game, could we have got more pressure on the ball? We absolutely could have. Both Seamus and Josh could have got more pressure on the ball. And if that had been Bruno Fernandes maybe cocking his leg, would we have? Yeah, potentially. So there's a bit of a mentality one there as well, in terms of the alertness. When you play against the top players in the world, it's there. Mm. You just have to be on it, or you know there's only going to be one outcome. And we certainly, and I include the players in this, we don't underestimate Luxembourg's and Azerbaijan's, because we're not good enough to underestimate anybody. That's the harsh reality of it. We have got a brilliant group who we love working with all the time, and we never sense that underestimation on their part, or our cockiness going from Portugal into Azerbaijan, and likewise from Serbia, a decent performance away, even though we lost the game, into Luxembourg. There wasn't a sense, a sniff of that whatsoever. But in terms of defensively, I'm quite happy with a lot of aspects of what the lads are producing camp to camp, which is difficult because triple header windows,
yes,
time precious in terms of how you prep for it. But in terms of those goals, obviously we're far from enamoured.
No, that's fair enough. So one of the other areas which is often discussed is the way we're now playing out from the back in a big way. In some people's eyes, this is the way forward and they're thrilled to see it and they're willing to live with the mistakes. For others, this is overplaying and you're asking players who aren't good enough under pressure to play out. And I could list off examples where it's backfired. Give us your take.
Yeah, for me, it's very simple. Our players are good enough to play from the back. And then there's, again, the information given to the players in terms of, if we have the luxury of doing it on the pitch, we will do it, we'll work on it, we break off into unit work. We do that quite a lot in terms of those back three, back five, goalkeeper or whatever, the two midfielders linking it. The pictures are there based on what we've seen from the opposition in terms of how they'll press, and we always try and give them an out ball, and then it comes down to that individual player to make that decision. We don't want players overplaying. Some people will perceive it, and it's obviously subjective. Some players occasionally make wrong decisions. That happens within football. If we want to go to one-dimensional football and just play long, it's not for me. I wouldn't buy into it. I think the players are better than that. I know the players are better than that. We see it week in, week out with their clubs. When you look at the goalkeepers that we have, how good they are with their feet and how much they can dictate play and give assurance and belief to those players, there's always pictures for them. There should always be pictures for them. And at times, if that player on the ball hasn't got the picture, it's not his fault. It isn't his fault. There's also an element of the play short to lure the opposition in. And again, going back to the goalkeepers in particular, the type of delivery they have to play it into front players.
Which, to be fair, I would say we saw that against Serbia in particular. Like, really well, lure them in. And Bizunu, I mean, he's just a revelation. I think everyone smiles when they bring him up. I mean, his delivery is class. So you could see that working really well. Pinged balls to the wing-backs and it worked great. I would think, I mean, I could give you individual examples here that I jotted down from the campaign, be it the penalty conceded against Portugal. Is that for you an example of overplaying there, where they were really pressed up?
I, I think when we look back at it, there's a few components that didn't quite add up, and then it comes back to the decision making. That if the bounce ball is in, the one that I think is perceived as risky is, say for instance, our centre half is on the ball and he's got a bounce ball in to a centre midfielder, even though there's a Portuguese player up his backside. Mm. Can you bounce it in, safe side of the player, to take the opposition player out of the equation, and it's a simple bounce ball out to either the other centre half or the wing back?
Yeah.
Sometimes we'll push wing backs on to allow that little bit of space for our centre halves on either side. That's not risky football for me.
Mm.
That's players passing the ball 15, 20 yards into an area to be able to pass out. Again, we see them do it all the times for our clubs. So there is no risk with that for me, as long as there is an assurance to how we play. And again, the players are more than capable of doing it.
Mm. That said, it results in a penalty against Portugal, against Serbia. I'm working off the more recent games because they're probably fresh in people's memories. There was one where, again, it's what can you do, but it's a ball back to Duffy and it slips under his foot and Serbia are in for a chance. Your point is obviously they're worth it. We're sticking with that and we're going to have to live with some of those moments.
I think, you know, like, new managers come into jobs, and I'm thinking when I've seen new managers comes into Premier League clubs or whatever level it is, and you look at what they try and change, and then for me it's always, are the players capable of playing in this way, and what is the benefit of playing in this way?
Mm.
Our players are absolutely capable of it. I genuinely don't feel like we're looking for total football here. I don't think it's at that level. I think it's a realistic level of what the players can achieve collectively. If teams want to come and press us aggressively, can we play around them? If we don't feel it's right, again, the information is there. Where's our out ball? Is it going to be Matt Doherty on this occasion? It'll clip to a wing back. Is it going to be into our centre forward's feet? There's always that. If this isn't on, if this doesn't feel right for you, secure for you, we know where it's going.
Okay.
And then we can go and play off that.
Is Bisuno a bit of a game changer in terms of his delivery? Those clip balls you're talking about.
I think he's phenomenal. I think the goalkeeping department is absolutely phenomenal. I genuinely believe that. I think when you think about who we've got, who would have been in the squad, the three players named in the last squad were obviously Gavin, Quivin and Mark Travers. And unfortunately, Mark missed out. Mark's playing in a team that's top of the championship, playing brilliantly. Quivin is just behind one of the best goalkeepers in the world. And Gavin has gone and proper earned his stripes last year. Tough times at Rochdale. Gone to a bigger club, more expectations, important, playing very, very well. So the goalkeeping department is in a brilliant place. And I think when you look at Gavin's performance, in particular against Serbia, but even against Portugal, to save that penalty, and it's just his demeanour.
Mm.
I think what he's got as well, he's got really, and a lot of the young players have this, which I really like. Obviously, they've got old school values. They really have old school values, and they've got that sense of, when we look at some of the senior players and the talismanic type of senior players we've had, Seamus, Shane Duffy, James McLean, that they eat it, they live it, they breathe playing for Ireland. Some of these younger players have it, and Gavin's certainly one of those. I think he's an extraordinary talent. I really do, and I think he's an extraordinary human being. He's such a humble young man. And we've seen his dad at the hotel, videoing him getting on the bus going to the Serbia game. It's so nice to see that. And you need to remember, he's 19 years of age. Like, phenomenal what he's achieved in these last few months.
I'll come back to the overplaying in a moment, but just to develop the Bisuno thing there, you mentioned his father. So I presume with COVID, things like bringing families in to meet them and creating a family atmosphere, is that all no-go?
Yeah, basically. And it's really sad, isn't it? Because they were the nice parts. I remember when I played and family could come to the hotel the day after a game, when you have those few hours, just a bit of downtime, and come and have a cup of tea and a scone or whatever. And it's also kind of interrupted how quick we would have liked the cohesion as a group, because when you go back to last year, it was that prevalent. You know, we've heard all weekend, and you will have heard it, Ryder Cup, the team room. We've got a team room, a working room, that was put in place, the 21s, and we wanted to introduce it with the senior team, because before that, treatment tables, masseurs, they were all in individual bedrooms. We wanted it all encompassing. We wanted to create an environment where players would interact, not just at meal times or going for a coffee here and there. So it's a big team room. all the medical department are in there. There's table tennis, there's a pool table, there's beanbags, there's PlayStations, where the players come and basically just hang out and have that togetherness. But obviously, during the peak of COVID, even when it comes down to meetings, 15 minutes, 2 metres apart, it's hard to build that. So, it has been difficult. But again, for the families as well, some of these young players, the kids have played 8, 9, 10 caps for Ireland. They haven't seen them play. Like, it's really, really sad. Really sad. So to get them into the stadium and to see them in and around the hotel as we were leaving was obviously really nice.
Yeah, definitely felt like a happier place, the most recent camp. But on the overplaying point, because I suppose for you and for Stephen, a low point is Luxembourg. Mm. My abiding memory, and it's great to have you in and to tease this stuff out as opposed to 2 minute interview here and 5 minute kind of flash interview. My abiding memory of that game, aside from the result, is Ireland repeatedly trying to play out in the left-hand side of our pitch and getting nowhere very fast. And I look back at the stats. So Bazunu gave the ball 11 times to Kieran Clark, 4 times to Darragh O'Shea, handful of times to the rest, and basically never went long. And if you look at who those players all passed to, I think Enda Stevens, he either passed to Kieran Clark or to Josh Cullen. Most of Cullen's passes went back to Clark. You get the point I'm making. Yeah. It was like a triangle of doom here. And Luxembourg sensed it early. We didn't beat the press. We kept trying. Fair enough, you got to keep trying. They sensed it even more. They kept coming. I got the impression Luxembourg were looking around at each other saying, this is great. We know what's coming every time. Let's press the holy hell out of these. And it really sucked a lot of life out of Ireland's performance. And I was thinking, if I'm seeing this, Keith Andrews and Stephen Kenny are seeing this. So what's going on? And so talk to us about that, because that's part of the overplaying conversation a bit.
Frustrating and not adapting maybe to what we should have and could have done. So you spoke a little bit there about maybe Serbia, if you're luring players onto you, there's a reason for that. Can it be sharp enough at times to play in, to go around them, to go through them? If not, then we bypass it. I spoke before about one of the big KPIs around our performance levels is bypassing opponents, getting past under control, not just lumping it downfield and hoping for the best. There's a purpose to how we go about things. They set up to show at that side. There's no doubt about it. If you press pause on the game, you'll see it was lopsided. They wanted us to go to that side. How we could get around that, go back out, use your goalkeeper to go the opposite side as they come across one side of the pitch, or as you've alluded to, maybe as they're coming out and they're on Josh Cullen or they're on Enda Stevens, then it's a simple clip from Kieran Clark into our front players. The knock-on effect of that for me, not always the player on the ball. I think the options and the angles ahead of the ball should have been better from our front players. Could have got across, could have made better different angles and clipped in. But we didn't adapt well enough within the game. There's no doubt about that. We didn't react.
Why is it so hard to get that message onto the pitch?
Like the heat of the battle, opposition throw spanners in the work. That a Luxembourg manager has been in place for a long, long time. They've got a really good unity about how they go about things. They're spiky opposition. We've seen that against numerous teams in this group. It's not always easy, even without fans. Now fans are back in, it's practically impossible. That was the one luxury, I suppose, in terms of getting little tidbits of information. But to totally go away from that, in terms of they've done their due diligence on us in terms of stopping something or setting something up to try and press, that was their pressing trigger. You asked what ours were against Azerbaijan, that was certainly theirs. Allow it to go to the left hand side, try and trap us in there, and then we didn't react well enough. And we know that, and we've spoke about obviously at half time, we spoke about a post game in terms of what we could have and should have done a little bit better on that occasion.
You mentioned there at the very start of the interview, and certain performance indicators, certain maybe the game plan, we didn't pick the right game plan, or maybe there's a breakdown in communication when certain things go wrong. What game of them all do you feel we went with the wrong game plan or the wrong formation, or we really, in hindsight, got that wrong?
Rightly or wrongly, I've probably split a line between last year, September, October, November was just so difficult. And it was so, if I go back to just briefly the start of that and talk a little bit about penetration and how we play, how we want to play. Yeah. I think first things first, you have to, and Stephen's big on this, you have to establish control. We have to get to a stage where our players are comfortable having the ball, dictating the play, being the ones that are probing, being the ones that are proactive within the game, maybe taking more of a a responsibility in possession. And I think it's probably fair to say within certain games at the start, we were keeping the ball too much without looking for that penetrative pass and penetrative run. So that was the evolution in the early days. So the early ones, even though there was decent performances in the main, I think certain aspects of those games will be quite frustrating in terms of performances and in terms of maybe personnel. I think it's always, again, easy in hindsight. We just spoke about Porrick, obviously, the weekend. And
Harrington,
and in terms of selections, and it's always easy. After the game, should have gone with him. Should have maybe brought him on at this stage instead. It's a constant challenge, and it's a constant one where we will at times beat ourselves up over. Should we have looked at that?
What's the one? Because I know a game had to pop into your head there. What's the one you would be more likely to beat yourselves up over?
I think the Luxembourg game is the one that's tough to take in terms of the result and in terms of certainly the first half performance, in terms of the way we allowed them to dictate where we were going, even though we dominated possession within the game. I still feel, again, we shouldn't have lost the game. It's just one of those where when we go back last year when we played Wales, and we speak about this a lot actually, even within the group, when we played Wales in the Nations League and we played Finland as well, we watched a lot of their games, as you do in the build up to the game, and I spoke about falling one side of the result, one side or the other. In a lot of both their respective games, they just fall on the right side of the result. They have that knack. They had that knack at that stage of being able to find ways of just coming out. And I still think we're getting to that stage. We're getting very, very close. If you look at the Portuguese game, we found a way of getting the equaliser against Serbia, which was brilliant for the group, and again showing that collective resilience to be able to keep going and try and forge away. But look, in terms of one, obviously when you look at the Luxembourg one, it would probably be that one.
I wanted to get your take on how much chopping and changing has been with the team, because it's quite notable. Like, in advance of talking to you, I went through all however many games. How many is it now? You're up to 15, maybe
16, isn't it?
16 games, yeah. A huge amount of changes all the time. So, for instance, take the most recent camp, because that's fresh in people's memories, and it's Portugal, and so it's O'Shea, Duffy, Egan, Coleman on the right, Doherty on the left, and it seems to work very well. And you put on Bamadeli, which is a brave move, in fairness, 36 minutes. And so you couldn't fault that. But say, for instance, let's do it through a certain player. So say Josh Cullen, for instance, in your midfield. So against Portugal, he'll have Matt Doherty as his left wing back. He'll be in there with Hendrick and Jamie McGrath, who was very good. Then you go to the Azerbaijan game and McLean goes to wing back. So suddenly Doherty's not there and he's in with Malumbi, and he's got the three young lads up front. So if you're Josh Cullen again, things have changed quite a lot. And then you go to Serbia, and so McLean is in again, but it's Hendrick to his left. So it's Hendrick who's more working with McLean. And again, he's got a different picture in front of him. It didn't strike me, and this is the question, because I'm thinking of you and Trapattoni, and you knew it was Glenn Whelan, you knew it was behind you, you knew it was in front of you, but it did allow, maybe there was a staleness towards the end, but it did allow relationships on the pitch to grow and little understandings and moments of, I know Glenn's going to do that.
I think that's really important.
So I just look at a lot of these team selections. We're throwing out a lot of teams where, if I'm Josh Cullen, using him as the conduit, God, it's different every time. Like, is it overly player-friendly to let, you know, to throw them at each... Like, it's almost impossible to imagine Parrott, Connolly, Ida clicking perfectly the first time. And I get building for the future, but someone like Cullen, he's never getting the same picture.
It's nothing about building for the future in terms of the actual team selection for the last camp. There's a few different aspects to it.
But do you get the point, though?
Yeah, I absolutely get the point, and I agree with you in terms of if you have that rapport with someone and you know how they're going to play, you know their traits, you know he's going to take it on that side, and then I'll make the run accordingly, etc., etc.
So I wouldn't feel, if it's a criticism, maybe it's a question. It's a question, because there's different reasons for the changes, but I wouldn't feel this Irish team have been given enough opportunities to go out again the next day and do it together.
Yeah, I think there's a few aspects to that. Triple header windows are something that we've never had to deal with as a nation. Three games in the space of 7 days with the intensity that we're playing at against this type of opposition is very, very difficult.
Yeah.
So you've got to factor in, and again, that's something we're very conscious of. This morning, before I left, email players' minutes, who played what this week. We're very conscious of players coming in that are undercooked, that haven't kicked the ball for the clubs. So can we bring someone in? Jeff had hardly played a game for Newcastle before that camp. Similarly with Jason Malumbi. Other end of the spectrum, Josh Cullen. He played a lot of football for Anderlecht. A lot. Plays 90 minutes every single week, 2-3 times a week for Anderlecht, and playing very, very well. Some players are not capable of playing 390 minutes in the space of 7 days. That's where they're at in terms of their physical capability coming into camp. So that's a constant juggling act.
Is that why, for instance, say the likes of McGrath, who does well against Portugal, doesn't play against Azerbaijan, when you think he might have actually worked well in that game, maybe in behind?
I think sometimes it's that in terms of what it's taken out of them. Sometimes we're learning as well in terms of going back to last year when we've played a player in the first game and then they've played and played really well and played 80-90 minutes for instance, can they go again? Yeah, we think they can, they recover well, but they haven't.
Right.
So then we're going off our experiences of a certain player as well. And there's also the element of what we feel is going to hurt the opposition in terms of the profile of that particular player in that position. So they're the kind of they're the balls that you're juggling in terms of players coming in undercooked, overcooked, where they're at in terms of their physical capabilities. Is it realistic that this player can play the full 3 games? And the further you go up the pitch, we're big on our GPS and we work really close with Statsport, who are phenomenal to work with. The higher intensity running is the one that gets you. So you look at Seamus in terms of played the first game in terms of as a wing back, probably slightly different for him in terms of what he's even playing for Everton. Playing in a back four, picking and choosing when he goes. A big part of how he played against Portugal was obviously Matt Doherty and Seamus Coleman breaking into that space. So his physical loads were big. Played in a different position in the game against Azerbaijan, tucked one in, obviously right-sided centre-back, and unfortunately he tweaked his hamstring right on. So these are constantly things we're thinking of in terms of who can do what is realistic for them to achieve. And obviously you've got to bring the players' care into it. You can't just turf them out there. You've got someone like Shane Duffy or John Egan, like they're just, there's a less explosive nature to how they play with the nature of the position, obviously, compared to a wing back or one of our explosive wingers, for instance, or forwards.
It's a fair enough answer. Like, it's a pity because I'm sure you would like a bit more consistency.
Well, if you go back to the traditional double headers, then it's manageable.
Yeah.
You go back to it. This window's a little bit different.
You've two.
Barring the travel, which is a serious jaunt over to Azerbaijan, 2 games, a week build up. It's a bit of a luxury compared to what we've had, obviously.
We mentioned Bazunu. Who were the other positives for you over the last 15 months? Who's come through and impressed you?
I think it's both for me. I think it's not right to just talk about younger players. I think you've got to look at middle of the road players, as in age.
Not standard.
No, not standard. Important to point that out. Some of the younger ones have been amazing.
Such as?
Well, Darragh O'Shea, for instance, the way he's grasped his opportunity, his mentality of how he's come through, and the managers he's had at, say, West Brom, that,
like him.
Might not have known him, Slaven Bilic, but like him. Sam Allardyce, now another manager. So he's a big miss for both club and country. Touch on the goalkeepers in that area. The amount we've brought through, and again, I think that's what you get in terms of performances. Sometimes they're there, sometimes there's that drop off, which is natural with younger players. I think we look at two in particular. Andrew, who's obviously just come into it, brought him in the summer to the training camp we had in Spain and played Andorra and Hungary, obviously. That kind of, and Jamie McGrath came into that trio as well. Like Benny, who's brilliant character, personality, and has real attributes that we like, and he's playing very well for Rotherham. If you look at that camp in terms of bringing them into the environment that was a little bit less hectic, settling in, getting to know the players, that was a huge benefit. Andrew and Adam are developing really on international watch. You know, that's the harsh reality of it. Adam isn't getting as many minutes as he would like, certainly as we would like at Norwich, and that's obviously something that we're dependent on. We want him playing, we're eager for him to play. Andrew played last week, Stephen was at the game against Liverpool, played very, very well. But the way that they're developing, if they continue to do that alongside their club form, where will they be in 6, 12, 18 months with the opportunity that the manager giving them? Because you touch on it, bringing him on after half an hour in Portugal, Andrew, like, brave move. I don't know if many managers would have done that. I think traditionally we would have erred on the side of caution, but we have that much faith. So there's the younger ones, but you can't forget about the journey someone like Shane Duffy's been on.
No.
And the character he's shown and the desire to play for us and constantly be there and be unbelievable around the place. Matt Doherty in the last camp I thought was outstanding. So again, a little bit of a tough time at the moment with his club, but that platform and that, I think the other thing is probably is important for us, I think, as staff. We try and create a bit of a support network. Player welfare is really important to us in terms of looking after the players, not just in camp, but out of camp. So the ones that are going through that tough time. If you're playing week in, week out, nobody needs to hear from us. If you're scoring goals, you don't. It's the ones that are having that tricky time, the ones that are out of contract, like Robbie Brady at the moment, that might need a little bit. So that's always been something that I've thought was needed, and it's certainly something that myself and Stephen are big on.
One last football one. Goals going to be the issue, aren't they? So you go back, you look at all the results, it just jumps out a million miles in that period that you mentioned, which doesn't sound fun, around October, November, including the Slovakia performance. There are 6 games in a row with no goals, and then there's the Serbia game, which breaks the deadlock a bit. The Brown header, probably the best goal,
goal
of the tenure. Brilliant team goal and a real moment of, wow, this is maybe the possibility. There's the James Collins goal that night as well, where the keeper is charged down. But again, you go no goals against Luxembourg, 1 against Qatar. It's a set-piece move. Andorra is its own weird game. And Penny, for your thoughts at 1-0 down there. But then Hungary, no goals. In fairness, Portugal, there's a goal, but it's a John Egan header. Azerbaijan, it's Shane Duffy. Serbia, it's an own goal. So we bemoaned international managers after Robbie Keane, saying, well, look, I don't have a Robbie Keane. What do you want me to do? There is a certain truth in it. What can you and Stephen do to try and get more goals?
You'll never hear that out of this manager, certainly me. We love working with this group of players. They buy into absolutely everything we throw at them. Everything. So you will never, ever hear that. And that's something that I've been critical of things I've heard in the past, even when I was involved as a player. But you won't hear that from this manager's lip. There's utmost confidence in what this group can achieve. And I think when you tie in certain experienced players, which I've alluded to in terms of what they bring, and the younger players trying to develop to a level, goals are not easily to come by at international level. That's fact. That's where we have to be brilliant at basics. Every restart, you touch on the pressing of goal kicks, out of possession, can we win it back higher up the pitch so there's less defenders to go and be where they're slightly spread, or is it a set piece? We work really, really well on our set pieces, and we've got players that are obviously dangerous from those. You just have to find ways, Joe.
Yeah.
That's where it's at. It's not easy to come by them.
The FAI is, or certainly was, a dysfunctional organisation, and that leaves a legacy behind. Now, where I thought maybe we saw that mushroom up was around the Wembley video. And there's a 5-day investigation into that video. It proves costly because you lose Damien Duff, you lose Alan Kelly. What went on there? Are there people or a person behind the scenes acting against the best interests of you, Stephen, and the team, in your opinion?
I don't know. I still don't know. Which irks me a lot in terms of not knowing exactly what happened. We'll go to the video. I think it was blown out of all proportion. I really do. I'm very comfortable what was shown to the players that night. In terms of how it was conducted in the aftermath, was I totally enamoured? Probably not. I look at my relationship and working relationship with Duffer, and I was really, really sad to see Duffer go. Like, devastated. It was a horrible time in the aftermath. It was already a tough few months, which I've spoke to you about, but in terms of that time and the aftermath of that, dealing with that and speaking with him and the relationship I've had with him for such a long time and very close with him, I was devastated he left. Like, really, really devastated.
And so why does he go, and can you not talk him round?
Look, it's Damon's prerogative. It's not for me to get into Damon's business here or anywhere, really, and I've got much respect for I certainly wouldn't, but from my perspective, I was disappointed that he left. We've been lucky, and it's one of Stephen's best attributes, in my opinion. He recruits unbelievable staff. He really does. I'm not talking about
me. If you do say so yourself.
No, I'm not talking about me. I'm talking about the backroom team, the masseurs, people, not just professionals. Anthony Barry's come in from Chelsea, who has been brilliant to work with, slightly different to Damien. Love working with him, love his views on the game, rapport around. Similarly with Dean Kiely, I think he's been outstanding with the young goalkeepers. And again, for me personally, love working with him. So it wasn't a nice chapter. There's no way of getting away from that. It hurt. It wasn't nice. The spotlight that came on was something you just had to get through. And it was a horrible period. It was one way of thinking, this is just unsavory. It's not what's needed, clearly, with the journey that we were on.
And I do accept it's overblown, but is it right that Alan Kelly didn't think much of the video? Like, there must have been some people who didn't think much of it.
I don't know.
Okay.
I can't say. I've spoke to lots and lots of players, staff members, in depth about exactly what went on, but the feeling I certainly got in general was there was no issue. It was blown out of all proportion.
So you don't know, for instance, why an FAI investigation happened? You don't know who makes the complaint or why all that kicks off?
Which is
Do you have a suspicion of who it is?
Yeah.
And do you confront that person?
No, it's probably not the right thing to do. I think you know me well enough that I'm quite
confrontational.
I'll front things.
Yeah, yeah.
There's an honesty about how I like to go about my life, full stop.
Mm-hmm.
And if I've got a problem with you, I would say it to you. And I don't want an argument. I will just say it to you. And I would expect that in return. That's the type of relationships I like in my life.
Mm-hmm.
But in this particular instance, I don't know, which is probably makes it worse and harder.
Do you feel it's rude to go in and ask someone and accuse someone?
Yeah, of course it is. Of course it is, yeah, unless you know conclusively that it is that person.
And have you and Stephen and the team been able to make changes since all of that went on to try and protect the group a bit more? Or are you stuck with the fact that, like, there's people on the payroll and the FAI is not, you know, it's not a new organisation?
There's obviously been, Stephen changed a lot initially in terms of the staff, when you think about it. And like I said, they've been brilliant people, whether it's on the sports science side, what we do on there, GPS with StatSport, the masseurs, coaching staff. Like, it's unfortunately Rory Higgins left to go to become the manager of Derry City. Stephen Rice has come in and again took up that mantle and been brilliant with it as well. Like, so there's constantly been really good people that he's had to change, which he didn't want to have to change, but people leaving.
No, I get that. And I get his team, but more so the wider FAI team.
The wider FAI team is nothing really to do with me in terms of what goes on. We've been supported a lot in terms of what we've wanted to do, how we go about things. We know there's financial limitations in terms of where we find ourselves as an organisation. I think the powers that be look at what we're doing, look at what we're trying to achieve. They know the confidence we have and what we're doing and how we're going about it and where it will bring us to. So overall, the support that we've been given has been really, really good. Obviously, with the video, it was just one of those instances where could have obviously been dealt with a little bit.
Yeah. And again, sorry, this is a last one because I don't even think the video thing is that big a deal. My reaction to it was, like, not so much is this offensive or not, just would that get me going, you know, seeing historical references to England. I don't really associate them with Raheem Sterling. Like, would that have got you going as a player?
Again, I think you've just referenced that, like, as if it was the only part of the video. It's far from it.
Yeah.
You know,
I haven't seen it.
Exactly. So there was no part of that video that would have offended me, certainly.
Right.
In terms of what players need now, I think it's very different to what players needed even when I was playing, which isn't 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah. Look, ultimately, I think it's overblown. Probably spent too much time on it. A sense of the loyalty that clearly is there within the group is that somehow we didn't hear about Stephen Kenny and his heart and what happened in Sweden, which is just extraordinary that something like that stayed quiet. And he did his interview here with Nathan and it was a brilliant interview if people didn't hear it. So you would have witnessed that. That's no small thing to witness. What's your memory of the moments?
Yeah, quite scary, really. Quite scary. Stephen's obviously spoke about it. Again, it's...
Were you beside him?
Yeah, yeah. So Stephen wasn't feeling well on the bus and obviously he spoke about it and happened very near me. Fortunately, we had our doctor nearest, our sports scientist, Damien Dawes, medically trained, was brilliant in terms of how we reacted, in terms of my medical knowledge isn't of that type of level. So what can you do? What are you trying? You're just trying to keep people away and obviously try and help in terms of ambulance and medics in the actual airport itself. So it was a very scary situation to be in, yeah. And there was a few of us obviously stayed on board. You've got players that already gone through, and then you're weighing up who needs to go with players. I'd said straight away I was staying, and then invariably we ended up, myself, Jim Crawford, who was the 21s coach with me as well at the time, who's now the 21s manager, Damien Doyle, the sports scientist, and then Fergus McNally, who was Stephen's friend from school, who's kit man. The four of us stayed, went to the hospital, and yeah, he was a scary, scary episode, and it hit me, like really hit me. Wasn't a nice thing to see. Quite soft, really, Joe. I don't like. Quite an emotional character beyond this kind of front.
Yeah.
So it was a scary, scary chapter that I don't really want to have to see again. Yeah. So he's.
How long before you knew he was safe from the very worst?
Yeah, probably a few hours. Yeah. The staff over there were outstanding, absolutely outstanding in terms of. There was four of us. Obviously, it was pre-COVID, so it wasn't as. You know, in terms of being at the hospital, trying to let us know. We went in to see him, obviously, and stayed there that night. And then we came back a couple of days later. So it was, yeah, it was, and then obviously liaising with Stephen's wife. And
who makes that phone call?
I did.
Wow.
So it was not a nice one to have to make.
Obviously. Horrific.
Yeah, so it's, look, he's obviously a fighter. He's got a lot about him. And, yeah, thankfully he was in the right place for it to happen, and the right medical care was on hand.
Did it hit you a few days after the enormity of it? I presume you go into some kind of automatic pilot.
Yeah, you
shock.
Do. I think adrenaline kicks in, only in situations or any type of, like, not that I've been in that type of situation, but it kicks in, doesn't it, the adrenaline, you have to try and sort it. But then when that wears off, that supposed shock and what you've seen, and it's obviously. He spoke to Nathan off the back of Christian Eriksen's episode in the Euros, didn't he? So that was kind of, yeah.
Triggered it almost, yeah.
Brought it back, obviously, certainly for him. And I think it made him think about maybe things we'd seen, obviously, during that.
Did he talk to you after the Eriksen thing and say, I've seen this now from your vantage point, actually?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
A little bit.
And what did you say to him?
I was trying to downplay it. Look, I don't really want to go back there, if I'm being entirely honest.
It was grand, Stephen. Yeah. It was fine.
It was grand. We went and had a nice meal that night.
Yeah.
No, we didn't.
No, I can imagine. I can imagine. So, look, thank you so much for coming in and taking all these questions, because I tried to throw some of the critiques at you. And
well, I think it's only right. I think, like, you're never going to tell absolutely everything. That's not the way it works, obviously. But I think there needs to be a transparency around how we're trying to do things, the direction we're trying to go.
And is there any other message you want to get across or say about what's going on at the moment?
No, not really. I'm very, very confident, unbelievably confident in where we're going with this group, in terms of, I keep going on about the buy-in from players, and it's not just younger players, that cohesion between the younger players, the middle of the road players, as in the age group, the mid-20s, the Josh Cullens, the Chios, the Jamie McGrath coming in, and then the senior statesmen who've been phenomenal.
And if it gets to a point, so November, and then I think there's a couple of friendlies in March, and potentially Nations League summer in June, and I think the contract is up in July 22. So if it gets to the end of that road, and all these young players have all these caps, but the FAI turn around and say, results aren't good enough, lads, thanks, we'll leave it there. Mm. Will you have regrets? About how the way you've
it's a long way to go between now and then, obviously.
But in terms of the way you've approached this and putting in the young players, do you stand over it?
Absolutely stand over it. You can't see it. We don't live in a perfect world. I'm not a perfect person. Stephen isn't. Players aren't. Nothing's perfect. But in terms of the decision, you have to stand by them. Of course, you revisit those decisions in terms of every aspect of the game, the preparation, the aftermath. And we ask some seriously harsh questions to each other, and as a group we encourage that as a staff, in terms of, did we get it right? Where are we looking, in terms of, are we looking in the right areas? Are we doing things wrong? So there has to be that analysis after camps, in terms of players, personnel, style, everything. But equally, very confident in where we're going with this team, and I think the bond is very clear to see with the players, in terms of what they're trying to do consistently. And I think now we just need to bring that together a little bit more and kick on from here. It has to be the platform, because the performances, some of the performances, have been very, very good. Very good.
Keith Andrews, sincerely, best of luck.
Cheers, pal.
Thanks so much.